It's perfect. All right, here we go.
We are farmers. Bum, ba-dum, bum, 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 bum.
All right, there it is.
Hey, we are recording again. It's been so long. How do we do this? How do we do this?
I don't understand.
You're listening to the Face of Bay Network.
We invite people
of all backgrounds
to share their stories.
Their nuanced conversations
and forward thinking
and not taking ourselves too seriously.
Everyone's story matters.
Every voice is important.
Life is polarizing,
but not everything is black and white.
Come join us
as we fade to gray.
Bow, bow, bow. Man, those are some old voices there. But it's
old indeed.
It's been a while, yeah. Guys. Welcome back. Welcome back. Sorry to all of our faithful listeners out there. We've taken a little break. We're going to try to explain ourselves here, but sorry that it was just like a quick like pump breaks. We're putting out episodes, and all of a sudden, I think it's been like 2 months or so that we have not been recording.
Dropped off the face of the earth.
I think that's about right. Yeah, 2 months.
So we got some explaining to do, I guess. We needed to explain ourselves a little bit. And so I can't speak for all of us, but I can speak for myself. I went through last few months have been great. Needed a break. Again, I apologize. We didn't do like some sort of like official, like I actually hate when podcasts do that. And like, we're going to take a sabbatical or we're going to take a break. And we're back. And it's like, but at the same time, like I also hate when podcasts just stop putting out episodes. So I don't know.
Make up your mind, damn it.
Right. But, well, that's kind of, so, you know, if you've been listening to Fade to Gray for a while, been following us, you know, like majority, I'd say 90% of our conversations are around faith and deconstruction. A lot of really smart authors,
faith and destruction,
other, you know, podcasters and stuff have been on. We've had a lot of, great conversations. But I got to the point recently where I was just like, I don't know how many of the same conversations I can have with different people, you know, around, yeah, around faith. Not that it's not important, but we have like what, 120 episodes out there. And I think at least 100 of them are with some great people, some great stories that, you know, and, I still think it's important that they're out there and that it's being had, but I think everybody goes through different seasons of life. And I think, we all kind of hit the same season at the same time. Like, I mean, maybe Chris was a little earlier on it. He was like, probably like for a while now, he's been like, I just don't know if I care to talk about faith, but it's been something that was still important for at least myself. I can't speak for Elizabeth to talk about for a while. And honestly, like, a lot of the guests we were getting, like it made sense to just keep going. But life is busy, you know, 4 kids, you know, a couple jobs, like excuses, right? But it's like, it wasn't the same. Like the passion wasn't quite there. The conviction to have the conversation wasn't quite there. And I realized it's because it wasn't a bad thing. It was just because I got to the point in my faith or life where I was okay with not knowing. I'm okay with where I'm at. You know, I don't need to feel justified, or I don't feel like I need to attack a church that I'm not really a part of anymore. There for a while it was like, you know, these are my people, what's going on, this is crazy, we need to speak out against all this. And anymore it's just kind of like, I don't know that it's even my place because I've been removed from church for so long. And so we're still going to get people's stories. This episode today, as we have a special guest, Dax. He's here now. I can shout out and say, what up, Dax?
Hey, everybody.
but yeah, so we're still going to be putting out episodes, I think, bi-weekly from now on. And it's going to basically be me, Chris, Elizabeth, talking current events, talking about, you know, what's going on in our life, things like that. And then add in an episode on afterwards. It's a little bit different format, but it's still going to be a lot of the same content. And we're going to be focusing on Movies That Molded Me, our other podcast.
Like, hell yeah.
Quite a bit more. And so if you want more content, you can find us over there. But anyway, that's all I have to say of my rant of how I'm doing my explanation for our hiatus. But I love you guys, and we're going to keep doing this. But yeah, how are you, babe? Elizabeth?
Hi, God.
Oh, I'm doing. Oh, Elizabeth. Okay.
Yeah, I had to clarify that. I was like, wait a minute. I they both are going to respond if I say babe.
Yeah, so. We will.
Elizabeth, how are you doing? How have you been?
Well, I mean, busy as well, seeing as the same four kids that you have are the same four kids that I have, going through just myself getting too. That's been interesting. I don't know. A lot of signs pointing to premenopause, which has been great fun. So I'm trying to figure that out. Lots of doctor's appointments and various things there. And trying to deal with my own emotions through all of that. So that's been a roller coaster, in addition to trying to finish up school with the kids this last year, which I was really nervous about, but ended up doing all right and making plans for next year. And as far as schooling with the kids, and I was working really hard for a couple of months trying to get an extra hour so that I could buy a computer, a new computer, guys, not a used one. Then the monies went to fixing our car and paying some unexpected bills. So back at square one, I got really depressed about it. I'm like, F this, I'm done trying. So haven't been working quite as hard. So I'm ready to podcast.
Yeah, I was going to say, you have your own podcast, Four in Tow. How long has it been since you've done an episode of that?
Like 7 months. It's ridiculous. I have two recorded. I had one recorded in January that I completely lost because of my computer issues. And I've recorded two since then, which are in the Google Drive. I just don't have anything to edit them on. And I keep using that as an excuse, which is really all it is. Cause I could ask Omar if I could use his computer when he's at work, but I haven't and just don't and choose not to. Yeah. So, I'm not sure what I'm going to do with my podcast right now either. I've been reading a lot of books. That seems to be keeping me sane, as much as it keeps the rest of my family insane. So I'm wondering if I change tactics a little bit and stop talking homeschooling and start talking books, because I've been really enjoying that on all my socials, and doing it in my free time or making time all the time to do it. So, yeah.
I'm sorry to hear about the health issues. I know for a woman, that's got to be a very trying time. As a guy, I'm over here thinking, man, I'd want to go through menopause really quickly so I could just, not have a period. But I imagine that means something completely different to you. And I imagine that's, pretty tough.
It does. It's not like puberty where like you have a set time period, right? Like most kids go through puberty between the ages of 10, well, girls between 10 and 15, and it only lasts like a year when you're going through all your changes. For menopause, it's completely different. I mean, I'm hearing some people telling me they go through the process of menopause, it takes them 15 years. And I'm like, ooh. I don't even want to think about that. that's just way too long for me. I wish it were like puberty. We're like, okay, it's a 2-year process and now we're done. But apparently it takes much longer. So, yay.
Mm. Oh, I do want to say one good thing. I mean, there's been many good things about the break that we took in those last few months and revamping, basically refocusing what we really want to do. And I want to say, Elizabeth, like as busy or as down as like you say that you are sometimes on yourself, I think you've been great. And like, holding it all together, like you said, like you were worried how the kids' development was going, and, they did, all did great and fine. And
they were tested. So we know.
Yes. And like in most areas, they like were far above where they need to be. So, I just want to brag on you for a second. I'm going to keep going. You. So don't interrupt me quite yet. We also have had, just more time on our hands, lately. And so we've been able to hang out And with focus on movies that molded me, been watching a lot of movies and stuff and having like date night sort of things. And so I just think that you're great. And as far as like all the other stuff, like, yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to brag on you just for a second. Now you can keep going.
Thanks, babe. I love you too. So Chris, I want you to guess. There was one subject that my kids failed utterly at, like well below their grade level. Guess what the one subject was? You
had to go there, huh?
I have an idea. Was it history?
No. Uh-uh. No, they're fine there.
Oh, math.
Nope.
Spanish?
We didn't test that's, in that's Spanish.
I was going to say, so. that would definitely be weird if you did.
But those are three guesses, so I think you should just tell them, babe.
So
yeah, tell me.
Spelling. Spelling.
Ah, gotcha.
We have, yeah, between my inability to spell and Omar's inability to spell, we've produced kids who are unable to spell.
Well, the good news is that they're going to have spell check their entire
That's
life.
That's what my teacher friends told me. They're like, yeah, don't worry about that. Spell check's a thing.
That's funny. That's cool. Yeah. Well, I guess I should talk a little bit about, you know, my process of not being on the, you know, Fade to Gray for a minute. And I guess, you know, it all stems back from just kind of, I don't know where you and Elizabeth are as far as where your faith is at, but for me personally, you know, I'm to a point where I just don't really need to process it anymore, I suppose. Like my religious trauma, I feel like has been taken care of as far as me being able to hash it out over 2.5 years with you all, you know, going to counseling for it. And so having these conversations to me, like, although I think they're very important and I'm, you know, I'm very glad to continue doing that every now and again, it doesn't really mean much to me now as far as like my own recovery from religious trauma. And so, I think that's a good thing. And that doesn't mean that, like I said, I want to quit Fade to Gray or quit doing these episodes or anything. I think right. It just means, you know, possibly opening it up to other things and, you know, that we want to talk about. And I don't want to be one of those guys who leaves the church and is jaded and wants to just like always attack the church. I don't want to, I don't know, elevate the devil, and I don't want to put the saints in chains, as it were. I just want to, you know, do my own thing. So that's kind of where I'm at. And so that's, it's been a nice break. It really has. It's been good for me to kind of focus on things in my life and also get ready to kick your asses at movies that molded me. So
you see, well,
you're trying, you're trying with some rules changes and, you know, bringing in some old best buddies.
I don't know if it was really rule changes, but okay.
No, whatever helps get you the competitive advantage, man. Anyway, speaking of old friends and adding people to, you know, the movies that molded me side of things, our new co-host, Dax, and Chris's longtime friend, is on our podcast today to kind of tell his story and how it all kind of melds together or molds together, or all the synchronicities of how this just makes sense moving forward. So Dax, you said hi earlier, but I'm gonna beat Chris to the punch here. You know what we do here at Fade to Gray is we really want to get people's stories. So and we want to make you cry, so
I don't think you can.
He's not another robot, is he? We already have one of those.
So tell us all of your religious trauma and go.
Wow.
You know, I don't know quite where to start on that one. At the beginning or the end, I'm not sure what's the best place to jump straight into trauma.
So I guess I should say, like, Dax and I did not go to the same church, okay? But we were in it. Or school for that matter, but we were in, you know, adjacent towns and we knew people, and that's kind of how we met, was probably through our connections with the church. But maybe talk about, you know, how you got involved in the church in the first place.
Well, with connection with trauma, I want to know how you met Chris, because obviously that's traumatic for all of us. And we'll start there
for sure.
And then we'll just move away through the church and into why you decided to come back for just more, you know, punishment in the future. So
it is funny because Omar continues to give me and Chris grief about being these great old friends. And did not actually hang out one-on-one until we were probably 20.
Yeah.
And then hung out subsequently probably four times since then. And so, you know, best old friends is not quite the way I would describe us.
That hurts, Dax.
I know. Well, I meant it to. So, mutual respect acquaintances. We were very much the same kind of guy in our own individual groups, you know? And so that's really how our connection is, you know, we were the ones that thought that we had better music taste than all of our friends.
Is that what you're saying? The same type of guy? So you're like, you know, when in stature.
Yes, shortness is a personality trait. So,
what would you mean then by like same sort of guy? If isn't like isn't in stature, what would you mean?
Dax
like
is very tall, by the way.
So same kind of guy, meaning that we had a very similar temperament. As I was saying before, I was rudely cut off. We thought we had good music taste. We were interested in music and a lot of the similar interests as far as pop culture goes, but not we were not the overly serious people. We didn't take ourselves overly serious, even though we took religion incredibly serious, which is probably a good way to kind of give you a little bit of my story. Is that the way I found religion was kind of an odd way. I, you know, went to church and I live in Texas, and so, you know, Southern Baptist is a real thing. It's the biggest cult we've ever had.
Yeah.
And they're actively recruiting. And so, we went to Southern Baptist Church growing up. I didn't love it. I didn't have friends there. It wasn't my, like, my school friends' church. And so, it just wasn't my thing. But I went to, you know, Bible studies, and I went to, Bible camp in the summer and things like that.
Awanus Club?
What really happened was... I don't know what that is. So I guess the answer is no.
Sorry, I thought that was a Baptist thing.
I know what that is.
Oh, okay.
And so I eventually moved from the town I was born to a town in Oklahoma. And in Oklahoma, I met a couple friends. They were not people that became my lifelong friends, but they were, you know, nice and fun. I got invited to what's pretty famously known as the Power Team. I'm sure everyone's had some experience with some version of that. There's been a couple different versions of it, names, but the Power Team is essentially the muscly guys that rip phone books in half and break handcuffs apart and baseball bats and then tell you about Jesus at the end. Which I didn't know. I had actually seen the Power Team as a kid, but didn't remember the Lord being a part of it. I just remembered strong guys. And so I was all excited. I was like, I've seen these guys before. They may remember me, you know, whatever. So we go, and then everyone starts walking to the back room to accept Jesus, to fill out a little survey card. And I followed suit. And honestly, at that point in my life, I was really looking for community, and that was where I found it. Funnily enough, found it in punk rock right after that, but started with church, and I became one of the biggest advocates for church and religion in my town. Started an outreach group in my high school, which is not the best social status move when you're a new freshman. within the first month of being at school, we had a half court basketball shot. you shot the, you got, if your number got picked, you shot a basketball from half court, made the shot, you got a $50 cash. And then we told you about Jesus. Well, he made the shot. We didn't have the $50. I don't know that he ever got it, honestly. I don't know that he ever got it. One of the local Christian bookstores was supposed to cover us on that, and I cannot honestly say that that ever felt like went all the way through, which I feel terrible about, because that was not great. And I had people accept Jesus into their heart based on the basketball shot. So I was it good or bad? I don't know. We did a bunch of stuff. We had like a Subway sandwich after school one day. We threw a concert, which Chris actually played the concert in his band at the time.
Nice.
We had a bunch of different things, but I was kind of the central leader, member, organizer of that.
So and Chris was also playing at a Subway. I just want to go stop
what?
There. I don't want to rudely interrupt you again, but you said you were doing like a Subway outreach thing, and Chris was playing, his band was playing there.
We had an outreach group, and we had a lot of different events. One of them was we had a Subway sandwich after school for anyone that was hungry before they went home. They could come to a room, hear about Jesus, and eat some sandwich. Bought like a 12-foot sub from Subway.
I don't remember this at all.
Well, you didn't go to school with me.
I know, but you said I was there playing. I don't remember playing at an event like that.
There was another day where I threw a concert. These are separate events.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. I combined them in this story.
Yeah, I was making a list of the things that we did.
There was a comma there.
Gotcha. Okay.
There was a whole
I never
period.
Got that Subway.
Yeah.
I could just picture Chris like playing for Subway or something. I was like, cool. I'll just get paid in sandwiches.
He'd probably still do that today.
I mean, that's a good deal. So we were doing that. My church was the big church in town, one of two, and had a televised service. And I spoke at church a couple times. So technically, I'm a televangelist.
kind of a big deal.
That's an interesting one for your profile.
Did all the church camps and leadership camps, and led Bible studies on my own, and created Bible studies, and did all kinds of things.
And how old were you when you're doing all of this? When you were on TV and being?
It's all high school periods.
So like so 16,
I
17.
I found Jesus when I was 13 in sixth grade, and then became really active, but wasn't a quote-unquote like leader in the church until 15. So 15 to 17, give or take, was when I was the most active. By 18, I started having a lot of doubts. I was dealing with mental health issues on my own, and they did not help the you have questions about your religion, the thing that's supposed to give you foundation. And so around that time, I started asking a lot of questions. I started finding a lot of hypocrisy in the church, not necessarily in the, not necessarily in the word of God so much as the people that were involved. And I had a really hard time with that. I did not want to be a hypocritical man. I didn't want that to be my legacy, where there were people doing terrible things and had a great reputation just because they went to church. And so I completely quit church, everything. My senior year, I dropped out of high school. I did everything I could to minimize my mental strain on my life. And one of those things was church. And when I did quit, I became a significantly happier person, felt a lot less guilt, a lot less stress, a lot less of a lot of things. And then, you know, went through most of my life actively, followed the, not necessarily teachings, because it's not really a teaching sort of scenario, but, sometimes we'll claim to be a member of the Satanic Temple, which is,
interesting,
a more or less organization than it is a religion. I think that they did get, a religion distinction this last year, or the year before. But yeah, I don't believe in Satan. but I also don't believe in God. I believe in science and logic and treating people right. And so do they. And so, that's kind of where I'm at now.
That is really interesting. I think for me hearing your story, like I was a little blown away that I guess I shouldn't be surprised. You're in Texas at a mega church that's got, you know, they're on TV. And so they're putting like 15-year-olds on stage. I'm just thinking how horrible of an idea that is, like, to begin with, like what that would, what that would do to like anybody's psyche, you know, feeling that amount of like, I mean, power. There's a feel of, you know, like, you know, you're, you know, there's a feel of power there. And it's like, how does like someone your age take that? And, but then it was interesting how you saw the whole behind the scenes quicker than say maybe myself or Chris, as if we've told our story, you know, we were a lot older as and when we were still deep into Christianity or deep into evangelicalism. And it is like learning how things work behind the scenes that seems to make most of people's deconstructions happen faster. Seems like the people that sit in the pews and, you know, are not taking it quite as seriously, not like, you know, on stage, they seem to not have to wrestle with the same things, as often. And so like, it's interesting how it just, how quickly that happened for you, like your whole, the whole like rise and fall of Christianity. And now it's all hail Satan. That's crazy.
it is an interesting endeavor to consider the path that I took, and that I was so and I wouldn't even say indoctrinated, but I was just so bought in from day one. I do believe that I was doing, you know, it's compensating for something I was missing, and for me that was emotional connection. I have what's called borderline personality disorder, which is also confused with bipolar disorder. But essentially it's an inefficient ability to connect with emotions, sympathy and empathy as well. And so when you're not connecting to yourself and to your natural emotions, you create at least the illusion, not just for other people, but for yourself, of connection. And so to be incredibly faithful, to be essentially outreaching, trying to create faith in other people, that was the illusion. Dax is a caring guy. He loves people. He's, you know, he's this, he's that, whatever people would put on me. If I created that scenario for them to easily be able to say, you know, what a good guy, then I didn't have to manifest any actual real feelings about anyone or anything. People were already doing it for me. And so that's really what was happening, you know, with 20 years of hindsight behind me. Now I know that's what was happening. But for a long time, I just thought, God is real. I'll go to college. I'll become a youth minister. I will live my life and I'll be happy and have kids and a wife and all that stuff. And honestly, if it wasn't for a couple people that, who probably don't even know that they affected me the way that they did, I would still probably be doing that.
So, but I want to talk about those people. But before we do, I want to ask about your family. How did your family feel about you getting involved in church? It sounds like you weren't a church kid until you were in sixth grade. So they would have had some kind of feelings about it, I would imagine.
My mom was my primary parent, so she was happy that I was going. She always really wanted me to be a good kid, even if I had a little bit of rebellion, which essentially was, you know, dyeing my hair and listening to punk rock music. You know, I called my dad from church camp on a payphone collect and told him he was going to hell when I was 15.
Wow.
And cried on the phone to him for hours. I'm sure it was very expensive for him now that I think about it as well. But I told him he was going to hell and that I wasn't okay with it. And I didn't talk to him for about 2 years after that because we didn't reach a resolution. So yeah, they were supportive, and they always have been in all of my life, but neither one of them were bought in the same way that I was, mm-hmm. but they were just happy that I was making that choice over drugs and whatever, you know.
Sure. So talk about the people that helped you. You were mentioning them, like, come out of the religiousness and set you down the path you're on now.
So I made a couple new friends when I started exploring the idea of maybe leaving the church. And one of them told me that the football player in our town, who was very well respected, had been being emotionally, physically abusive to her. Whether that be defined the way, I can't speak to it because I was not there. She described it very similar to what someone would describe as him raping her for years and years and years. And he was one of those people in town that everyone said, I wish you could be more like him. I wish my kids were that good. They were the football player, Christian, you know, AP student, whatever the list may look like for his accomplishments. And I just remember thinking, like, I used to call that person my friend. And now this person that's actually really kind to me and is actively calling me and wanting to be friends in my life has been traumatized by this person that the town sees as someone to be heralded. And that was really tough, because she indirectly thought I was probably friends with him because we went to church together and we're in the same grade and classes together. And, you know, we weren't directly friends outside of school, but had been, and there was no reason that we wouldn't be classified together, because a lot of our accomplishments or weekly paths crossed. You know, we're in church together, we're in Sunday school, we're in Bible studies together. Why would someone not assume we're friends, or friendly at least? And mm-hmm. I just didn't want to be guilty by association for anything that I wasn't doing. And I know that people don't assume that you're doing everything your friends are doing, but I had a really tough time with that. It really hurt my idea of what life was supposed to look like, what people get away with in life. And then it opened my eyes to a lot of things that I just hadn't been aware of before that. I knew that bad things happened, but when you know who they're happening to directly, it really changes things. You know, it's not just an abstract idea. It's a person now. And that was something I really, you know, for someone that wasn't feeling empathy, it really hit me hard, you know? And so, that was a big one. And then, I started going to therapy. And I went to a couple, like, Christian counselors, saw some pastors, I saw actual psychiatrist that was a Christian man. And then what the person that really helped me the most was a gay Freudian sex therapist. And he and I had real conversations about things that weren't slanted by anyone's agenda. And that really opened my eyes to a lot of things, where part of the conversation I had was like, what if I say the word damn, what's gonna happen? And he was like, it will come out of your mouth and people will hear it, like, that's all that will happen.
Yeah.
And that was a big, like, holy cow, like, I guess this is, you know, the consequences are not as dire as are being described to me every weekend or every Wednesday night or Tuesday morning or Thursday evening and all the times I was going to church. And so that changed my perspective a lot, because I realized that I didn't have to feel so guilty about listening to a band that says a word, you know, like, I had a real guilt moment. I think Chris had that as well. We've talked about this, about you have to purge your CDs or secular things and all of that. And when you kind of get past that and realize, like, oh, these are music. These aren't even my thoughts. They're someone else's thoughts and their art. And, you know, like, why am I going to make myself feel bad about appreciating art? Like, no one is throwing away you know, Van Gogh paintings because he was not a great guy, you know, like what are we doing here? And so, yeah, it was just one of those things that, I started thinking for myself and making my own decisions as opposed to, predetermining how I felt on something based on a book or dogma, you know? Mm-hmm.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
How long do you think it took once you actually stopped going to church for you to kind of come out of it and feel safe to kind of explore this different you?
So the year after I quit going to church, I was very unhappy still. I had a little euphoria period where everything felt great. And I had a girlfriend and I moved out of my house and was going to concerts and work was going well. And, you know, everything was great. And then at 19, I got in a really bad car accident and I broke my back and both of my feet. My intestines were cut open through my seatbelt, through my skin. Was in the hospital for 3 months, rehab for a year. It was a big traumatic event and everyone kept showing up and saying, oh my gosh, you know, you were saved. God saved you. And like, what a blessing. And like, obviously has a purpose for you. And I really remember feeling like my seatbelt saved me and the fine people at the Honda Motor Company saved me. And the fact that I hit the tree at the right angle, as far as physics is concerned, is what saved me. And I don't know, it didn't really have that sort of religion epiphany near death experience. I kind of had the opposite. So it was probably around that period getting out of the hospital and actually dealing with what was going to come next in life was the moment that I was like, oh yeah, if I was ever going to go back to church, it was probably right now. And I'm not. So like, I think I'm out. I think that was the moment of clarity.
Man. Well, as someone who got to see your vehicle afterwards and got to see all you guys in the hospital, cause there were three other people in your car. Four other people in your car. I can just say that, you know, it's not a miracle because I don't believe in that, but like you guys were lucky. You guys were so lucky to have survived that.
Did all of you survive?
Yes, I was the worst off. I had the most like severe injuries. Thankfully it was me driving my car and the worst off. And so nobody went to court. One guy broke his back. Everyone had internal injuries. Three people had to have surgery for that. And one girl broke her wrist. That was it. And we were going 120 plus and hit a tree. And like literally the ambulance driver had breakfast with one of my best friends that next morning. They just happened to be planning to go to breakfast. And he didn't even know that I was in town visiting because I wasn't going to be able to see him that trip. And so I didn't let, you know, you don't let everyone know, hey, I'm in town, but I'm not going to see you, you know, like, so I just kind of didn't say anything. I was planning on leaving the next day and he had breakfast and he was like, his ambulance driver friend was like, oh boy, I had a really bad accident last night. I'm going to have nightmares over it. He was like, really? What happened? He was like, yeah, it was this black Honda out on this road over here. And my friend was like, black Honda? What did the driver look like? And it was a tall, lanky guy, you know, whatever. And he was like, whoa, okay, tell me more about this. And at some point he kind of realized it was me and called my mom and was like, is Dax okay? And she was like, we're at the hospital. He was like, oh my goodness. So the ambulance driver was telling him like, this is the worst accident I've ever seen in my entire life. There was exhaust everywhere. There were kids everywhere, broken glass. I legit had a friend, the windows broke out on the side. It was a two-door Honda and he couldn't quite pull people out of the windows. So what he did in an adrenaline fit, he actually grabbed the window frame and bent it down to open it more. So the window frames were actually bent not at, quite at 90 degrees, but they were bent down to give us more space to get out.
Wow.
He pulled me and my friend in the passenger seat out on both sides. He pulled both window panes down. And then everyone else was jumping out the back window of my car because the car was filling up with exhaust because the exhaust pipe flew off and was just flowing into the car. So yeah, really, I mean, it was a, I don't remember any of it. Honestly, I don't remember anything 5 hours before and then 18 hours after.
Wow.
And so the, my first memory is I was in the hospital. I was in ICU in my little small town. I remember looking up and seeing a bunch of people around me. I knew that I was hurt. I knew it was bad. I didn't know what had happened exactly though. And with eyes barely opened, I looked around and said, is my face still beautiful? And the girl I was dating at the time was at my bedside, and she said, of course, like, of course your face is so beautiful, and she's comforting me. And I heard from in the hallway, someone said, still? And that's my first memory of anything. So
wow.
Yeah. It was very crazy. I deal with it every day. I'm in pain forever. I've had 18 surgeries total in almost 19 years. So, yeah, that's my my car wreck part of the story. It's funny because we had talked about how much to talk about this as far as religion goes, and it kind of doesn't affect the religion part at all, which is odd. It is my story, but it isn't, like I said, it wasn't a coming back to the church, and it wasn't pushing myself further away either. It was just kind of, I don't know that it was a result of leaving the church, but it definitely wasn't, it wasn't the redemption story that you might assume it would be. It would make a great movie. I mean, really, I should turn that into a movie. It'd probably sell, but
except you have to go back to Jesus at the end.
Well,
you could sell that to the Christians and like, oh my God.
Yeah. The main character does. It doesn't have to be me.
It's almost like a modern day Jonah story, you know, with the whole whale and trying to, like, you know, running from your past and the prodigal son thing. But yeah, you have to end up giving your life to Jesus. So, and you have to, and for it to be a Christian movie, you have to make sure you have the right catchphrases apparently too. Anyway, that's part two.
I've already thought about it. The catchphrase will be, I'll be back.
I think that was used. I'm not sure, but
well, we'll check the copyright.
Man, obviously that's heavy, and there's a lot we could potentially unpack there. I mean, that's always been, I think, anybody's biggest fear, you know, in a car wreck, you know, is the other people, you know, is like whether you hit somebody or there's somebody in your vehicle, you know, it's like, if you're the driver, it seems like that's like, you're like, you know, luckily I got hurt the worst, you know, but it's like, it's weird that it's natural, but it's weird that, like, I guess that's not weird. We have those feelings if it's natural. But I guess it might be weird for you, somebody that doesn't really experience a lot of empathy. And that's the thing, is like, it's interesting listening to your story and how you have, you know, been able to assess, you know, how you processed, you know, your, you know, you say, like you said, looking back 20 years now on your whole faith deconstruction, you know, journey. But it seems like in the small time that I've known you and, like, listening to how things have impacted you in your life, that you really do have a lot of empathy, or that you really do are able to feel greatly for other people. So I'm just
interested. Well,
go ahead. How does that comprehend?
The way that happens, typically for most, at first, most people that are doctors that diagnose you with mental health issues give you a lot of medication. And then, and at some point I was able to kind of start taking that away again. You know, I tried to talk here with a couple of different people, went through some bad relationships for lack of awareness of self. Because it's very hard to be in a equal, loving, balanced marriage if, you are not an equal, loving, balanced person. And so it's only been since I was diagnosed with the borderline personality disorder, which I do believe that I had since around 13. I believe that it showed up at the point that I moved and was at a loss of who I am and where I was going to be.
That's just the Holy Spirit. That's not a borderline personality. Oh, okay. That's just when Jesus came in you. That's the Holy Spirit.
And he took away my feelings of love.
Yes. Yes, the God of love did that.
And so once I did get finally diagnosed about 3 years ago, that really changed things because I wake up every day and I have to choose to be present. I have to choose to feel connection, and I make those choices every day and every moment that I live in. And so I don't have that natural sort of like, this is my life and these are my friends and family and I just love them. I have to make that choice to do it every day. It's not an easy road to hoe, as they say. And so you just have to say, what do I want my life to look like? And then try to manifest it as best you can.
Yeah. I think that's good. I want to just touch briefly kind of on, cause I know that here in a second, we're going to transition into more of like, talking about movies and whatnot. But if you had like one takeaway from your life in Christianity, and the stuff that you've had to deal with since the wreck, or even with your diagnosis, what is it that you'd want people to know? Like what about your life is important for others to see or to know?
The biggest thing that I feel at this point about religion and faith and all of that is that I don't look like the Jesus kid anymore. I literally have the words "no gods" tattooed on my neck and an inverted cross on the other side of my neck. I don't look like that person, but the truth is, I think faith is a beautiful thing. And I think that if you have it, that should be celebrated. And that faith in God or people or whatever is something to be cherished. And we give this really cynical take on humanity, on religion, on a lot of different things. And I would really like for people not to do that. I think that people that do have faith, although some of them would be described by many people as sheep or saps or, you know, following a false idol, whatever it is. Here's a good example. I have a friend that loves Mickey Mouse. She just loves Mickey Mouse. Makes her happy. Guess what? That's no worse than loving Jesus. And the truth is, most people that love Jesus are happier loving Jesus than she loves Mickey Mouse. And I don't think that should be shamed. The one thing I will say is you have to, and the Bible tells you this too. I mean, I'm very well versed in the Bible. You're not supposed to feel guilt. You're not supposed to be taught to feel guilty every day about your choices. You know, granted, you're not supposed to walk around sinning and acting like it's no big deal. But the truth is, Jesus, God, Holy Spirit does not want you to feel guilty about your life and your choices. That is not the message that is written in the Bible. And we can debate all day how legitimate the Bible is. But but if that's your foundation for faith, stop feeling guilty. You know, love your kids, love your spouse, love your neighbor as best you can, turn the other cheek. And then, you know, all those things that they teach, they're not bad ideas. They've just been manipulated by people to make money. And that's the biggest downfall of religion, is that people started making money off of it.
Mm.
And so for me, if you have faith, I want you to know I'm happy for you and that I don't think you're an idiot for your faith. I may think you're an idiot for a lot of other reasons, but it's not because you have faith. So.
Yeah, that's really good, Dax. Thank you. Yeah. Anybody else have any other questions?
No, I mean, I've got to know Dax a lot today. I mean, I would like to know, like, you know, is that your, you know, birth certificate name? What is your name and social security number?
I'll email you that later.
Right on. You said you're not going to judge people on, you know, I think that was a beautiful way to end that. That's part of, you know, the interview and stuff, that you don't judge people for their faith choices, but you do judge people though for their movie choices, clearly.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
And so let's go ahead and transition to that part of it. And it seems like with the wreck being such a pivotal point of your life and how you're still dealing with it now, does that impact you to where, like, I mean, I kind of know this part of your story, but like, that, are you working? And if not, what are you doing to fill that time?
I have worked in retail management for 15 years. I owned and managed a bar, a whiskey bar with my dad for a little bit, which was really fun. So I've worked, I've had so many surgeries. Surgeries have kind of put me back on what I'm physically capable of doing and also what I'm physically willing to put myself through every day, every week. Currently, especially through COVID, my son needed some extra care. We didn't have the resources to put him in like a full-time daycare while I was working. Currently I'm living on disability, from Social Security, and just trying to figure out what is next. I'm happy with my life in general, and I'm happy being able to be here for my kid. Got divorced in 2019, so it's just me and him now, primarily at home. So I spend a lot of time watching movies and TV shows. I'm at 390 brand new movies year to date. I keep a list of everything that I watch, how I watch it, where I watch it, what I rank it, all of that. So I do rewatches as well. I've been rewatching TV shows. I'm watching new TV shows actively. I watched a whole season of a show just so I could tell my mom whether or not she should watch it last week. So yeah, I do that a lot. And the truth is that you asked about like the whole empathy thing. A lot of my understanding of life and myself came from movies, and learning things through other people's experiences. So, movies and all that have really shaped who I am and who I want to be and some of those choices. So is someone on a motorcycle?
Yeah, that's the way it is. Stop
podcasting on your motorcycle.
Well, my grandmother used to say that whenever she, you know, farted or somebody farted, that's just a mouse on her motorcycle. So I think that's Chris's way of saying, like, you know, passing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty highbrow there. But, so 390 movies to date, for this year alone, just this year. That is insane. And you keep a record as you're watching them. And so it's not like you're doing it purposefully, and which is also pretty cool, honestly. And happy to have you as part of Movies That Molded Me. Like, we've recorded a couple episodes now. It seems like, you know, your recall on a lot of these movies and like the things that are happening, you know, behind the scenes with the actors and stuff, just add a whole new dynamic to Fade to Gray and, you know, like maybe some of the things we're doing with bonus material and things as well. But so it clearly, like, your accident didn't affect like your memory very, very much then. If you're
100%, it affected my memory. Like, I have crazy short-term memory issues. I had a traumatic brain injury. I couldn't even remember the abbreviation of that. So I have real memory issues. If I walk up to someone and they say, "Hi, my name is Brian," and by the time I say Dax, I've already forgot Brian.
So is that why then you maybe keep the list, you think? So detailed list, because to help you remember?
I think that's a good indicator. Also, it's a comfort thing for me. I like to know, it's like a marking of time, you know. Each month I can tell you how many movies I've watched. It's a measurement of time. When we create value in our lives, we create significance in our lives, whether that be the people that we spend time with, the activities we do, our jobs, our religion, or whatever, when your life gets really small, you have to figure out a way to continue to create that significance. And being someone that isn't as emotionally fulfilled by things and people, I have to create significance in ways that are a little bit more abstract. And so for me, that's been a really good way to do that, is watch a movie, rank it, rate it, make a list, make a best of list. This will be a callback later, or this will may, you know, whatever, we'll figure it out. I had, do have two failed movie podcasts, which is on my resume for the application for this job.
Yeah, that's actually why we wanted you. We were like, oh wow, he failed twice at this, so like, of course he's gonna be perfect for us. So no,
That's really the idea, is that it's creating value within my life. If I did it willy-nilly and I got to the end of the year and I watched say 500 brand new movies and I had no idea which ones they were or how I remembered them or how I felt about them, it could feel really even more empty. And so the fact that I've got all this time and choose to fill it with movies, I kind of have to keep the order in the list, or else I potentially could feel even worse, you know. Yeah. Like it's a value structure.
Well, yeah. No, I think that's really smart, and it definitely makes you a great person to join our Movies That Molded Me team, because you, like Omar just assumed that you had a great memory because you have such a depth of knowledge of movies, because I guess of these lists that you make. And so you're able to really dive into them in a way that none of us are able to. And I think that that's, you know, really beneficial for the Movies That Molded Me. But what I think would be kind of interesting would be to tell really quickly the first time that Dax and I ever hung out, just he and I. Dax invited me to come over to watch a movie. And
you invited yourself.
Did I?
Yeah. You said, I really want to watch this movie, Requiem for a Dream, everyone is talking about. And I don't know anyone that has it. Do you have it? And I said, I do. And he said, well, maybe I should come over and we could watch it sometime.
Oh, okay.
And I said, I'm more than happy to have you over. Are you sure this is the movie that you want to be watching? Because I knew him not to be a little thin-skinned as far as exposure goes to the darker things in life. Still very much into religion, into church. And so I'd seen the movie already. I didn't know that he was ready for it. Turns out I was 100% right. To the end of the movie and I'm used to a general discussion. Oh, that was really good. I really like the actors. I like this. Who is that guy? You know, just general, how'd you feel about the movie? It ends in a very traumatic way with, you know, a heroin addict getting his arm cut off, someone going to jail, a woman becoming a prostitute, seeing a very graphic sex scene in front of a bunch of men. It's really hardcore movie. It's a lot to handle. It ends and it's got this heavy score of strings, very, very dramatic. It ends and I turn to him like I'm going to say, well, what'd you think? And he stands up, looks me in the eye and says, thank you for inviting me over. And he walks out of my room, around my bed, walks down the hall. I hear the door slam and I'm like, what just happened? Where? It was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It was like, there was plenty of time to continue to hang out. He only told me years later, like 3 or 4 years later, that he walked out the front door, threw up in my front yard, got in his car and drove home.
That is 100% accurate.
I think the conversation might have helped you calm down. We should have gone got some tacos or something. Oh,
my little man. Christian mind could not handle Requiem for a Dream at all.
It was pretty intense.
Yeah. Yeah. At the time I had Darrenofsky trauma, not religious trauma.
Yeah, fair.
Sounds like you might have had a demon. I don't know. You have been like full on exorcism out in the front yard, but it seems Dax.
So like, Omar.
Yes, sir. What's up?
If you don't, pay your exorcist, do you get repossessed?
That was a possibly. Dad joke.
That's pretty good. But it does definitely is exciting having you on. It's a whole new like excitement. A lot of talk of like what we're doing to revamp movies at Motomi. We're calling it the Dax years, and
you know, Elizabeth is calling it the Dax years.
Well, I wasn't the first one to call it that, though. Then, yeah. Omar started.
Oh, okay.
I'm carrying it on. I think it's great.
Yes, and
I appreciate the faith that it will be going on for years. That's quite an honor to
for years have and
job security
fail.
Like that.
Even if it's only like 5 episodes, it's the Dax years. I think it will. I think it has some legs. I think there's some real chemistry, and we're already like, I think today, spoiler, you might see some stuff posted on Facebook later where we're even creating like fake studios and stuff after ripping off of like classic things.
Fake, maybe yours is.
It's fake news.
My fake studio, is gonna keep winning in this game that we have called Movies That Molded Me. Just in wrapping, it feels like we're coming like full circle having you back on, being back in Chris's life as besties again. I feel almost it's like your second chance, like God brought you back here. This is destiny. I mean, if this here, the relationships with the three of us doesn't prove to you that there is a loving God, then I don't know what will. I'm full of shit, but I'm excited to have you. Thanks for telling your story. Thanks for being vulnerable, and thanks for coming on and trying to help Chris win, but it's not gonna work. So
he's not been successful so far.
Well, here's the deal. Dax and I actually have there's a lot of similarities in our styles and stuff, but there are movies that I love that Dax hates and vice versa. I think we actually aren't as similar in our thought processes about movies as you think.
Clearly not with Requiem for a Dream. So,
well, I mean, in hindsight, it's a fantastic movie, but that's not anything I ever want to see again. Whereas Dax has probably seen it 100 times.
Well,
he's not denying it.
That's not true.
He can't remember all those parts, so it's okay. He can rewatch it. So it's been a lot of fun. Thanks, Dax, for telling your story, guys. Stick around. I think we'll end up live back on the Movies That Molded Me feed here shortly, playing religious movies. So as kind of a tie-in with listening to Dax's story and the whole Fade to Gray thing, with it being a bulk of our conversations being about religion, it just seemed to make sense. We haven't done that yet, and I'm actually very excited about this. We were supposed to record last week, and last week I wasn't as excited about the religious movies, and then I started like kind of looking into it, and
then he saw God's Not Dead 2,
and he was so excited.
I'm ready to talk all about it. You just wait. No, I have a short list of movies, but it's a strong list, and so I don't know what I'm going to do if people take it, because there's like, I saw a lot of shit growing up, religious movies, but we'll have to see whether or not I can put them on any list, I guess, if you get stick around. So thanks for listening, and thanks for keeping it weird. I know only Chris is going to get that, but
keep it weird that you make that joke on our podcast.
Yeah, anyway. Thanks for that. Anyway, bye.
Bye.